Hello and welcome to a bit of a different sounding Holtcast. I'm your new host, James Rushton. Now, we've had a bit of a shuffle over the summer as our two main boys, Robert and Jack, have gone on to bigger and admittedly better things, but we'll be sticking to that tried and tested Holtcast formula. Now, like the Gunners who have just claimed the Community Shield, we're back with a bang, and what better way to return than to kick things off with Miami's own Jack Grimsey. How are you doing, Jack?
Great, James. I'm so happy to be back. I was just looking today. I saw there wasn't a Holtcast since April. So sorry, folks. Sorry that I got a job, I guess. So been kind of busy with that. But I'm happy to be back on the Holtcast today and hopefully as a semi-regular guest in the future.
How's the weather over there in Miami?
It's hot.
Fair enough.
The summer is kind of the rainy season here, I'm learning, so it's sunny every humid. Day pretty much, but it also rains a lot, and yes, very humid.
Oh, uncomfortable. But yeah, speaking of that, we haven't really had a Holtcast for ages, and it's been for good reasons. I mean, Robert has been on to a full-time job, and you've obviously moved on to something we'll speak about in a bit. But there's been nothing to really speak about. Not much has changed in the world of Villa. We've still got the same manager. Mostly the same players, and there's only been a few new additions. It's more about building a foundation. That's boring work, but building a real team isn't something that's usually fun. Last year, we bought all the best players in the Championship, and that's something to talk about. That's something to get into the meat of. But yeah, we've been building a foundation. We brought in Ahmed Al-Mohammadi and Glenn Whelan, but we've also brought in John Terry as well. And I'll tell you what, yesterday, it was like I was dreaming. John Terry in a Villa shirt was really surreal. It's not something that I'd ever thought, you know, you'd see. But your thoughts on the summer, Jack, for Villa?
Yeah, like you said, over the past couple years, Villa have really been building the foundation, and they were getting rid of some of the pieces they didn't like, obviously, this summer, like Jordan Veretout, Carlos Sanchez, obviously. They've both moved on now. Even Aaron Tishbowl is going out on loan, but bringing in six players for a combined, what, less than £3 million? That's
good business.
That seems like good business for the players they've got. I know a lot of people now are starting to get in maybe a little more unenthused about some of the older guys like John Terry, like Glenn Whelan, but Al-Mohammadi's played, what, almost 20,000 minutes under Steve Bruce. I think that's good for Villa. And then Josh Onoma, Sam Johnston. I was not a big fan of Johnston last year, but yesterday I think he proved him that he's getting off to a hot start this year. And he was obviously good through a lot of last year, so I think it's exciting because you just have to hope that these pieces are the final pieces, I guess, to the puzzle to get back up.
Yeah, we're constantly speaking. You know, we're always looking for a solution, especially when we went down. The main goal was, like, remove the toxicity. And I assume that's happened. You'd hope so anyway. But yeah, the summer has laid the ground for the start of the new Championship season. So we're on to the first post-match review. Football's back while Aston Villa are back, because we've had a summer that where football hasn't really stopped, really, has it, Jack?
No, not at all. We saw John Terry even lifting a trophy with with Villa and with La Liga in the background, even though it was played in Germany. You know, it's...
That was a surprising tournament. Weird. 45-minute games against reserve teams. But yeah, we came out with silverware. And a proper match has just happened for Villa. We took on Hull in a match that opened up the Championship season at Villa Park. Recently relegated from the Premier League, they're without Marco Silva, who was a pretty good coach.
Yeah, they lost their silverware, I was going to say. I think he's one of the top 10 coaches in the Premier League, honestly, Marco Silva. But
he's great. And he had that bit of xenophobia come his way from our Paul Merson. Was made to eat his words, really. But he's moved to Watford, and we played them, and it was quite a promising game. I mean, they've got a bunch of great midfielders, Will Hughes and Chiloba. You know, that's a Premier League top 10 midfield, I'd say. They've some real talent in there. But anyway, Leonard Slutsky, sorry, I've had to pause because it's quite a hard name for me to say. Leonard Slutsky has moved to Hull to be their new manager, and he looked out of his depth in that first 10 minutes, and even went on to say it looked like Villa had two more players, and we hammered them in that early period. And as it says, XG, or expected goals, said it seven times out of 10, Villa win that match. They put us up about 2.11 goals to Hull's 0.86, so that would work out to a 2-0 win thereabouts. So not sure how we left Villa Park with a draw there, Jack.
Well, sorry to skip to the end, but I'll have to cut to the chase and say that those missed shots very late in the day by both Andre Green and then by Josh Onoma. I think those were both probably worth at least 0.4 expected goals each, you know, and looking at that metric, because those were, I mean, the goal was gaping.
Yeah, we'll come on to Andre Green in a bit, because there's quite a bit to speak about there, considering, you know, Andre Green, I remember he must have hit the crossbar or missed from a point blank range about 10, 15 times throughout his career. I searched it on Twitter and it's happened for England under 15s, England under 13s and all that. So
I remember watching it at work, actually. I was logging one of the Villa games and Andre Green came so close to scoring. And yesterday on Twitter, everyone was saying Scott Hogan is going to almost score 30 goals this season, maybe even this game, because he was, you know, he was right there.
Yeah, we opened them up straight away. We attacked brilliantly. We cannot fault the attack apart from scoring goals, which is quite ironic. But yeah, in the first minutes,
it's kind of what you expect the beginning of the year, a little bit rusty.
Teething problems, yeah.
Despite the preseason.
Well, Henry Lansbury had the best chance early on. Long ball comes in, he chests it down, hits it on the half volley, and it just goes wide, and you'd expect the goal to come from there. And after that, he plays Gabby in, and Gabby's burnt the defence. He's caught the offside right out. He's barely onside, and that's another. He's got one-on-one that has to go in. The goal comes shortly after.
That was right at the beginning of the game.
The goal comes shortly after. I think we scored on the 8th or 9th minute of play. Comes from Alan Hutton, of all people. He hit a cross. I think he under-hit the cross, and it caught everyone out. It just rolled like quite slowly through the centre of the goal, and it missed Hogan. I think it missed Lansbury, and it fell to Gabby, who buried it. He couldn't do anything else. The celebration was, you know, it was strange. I thought he was sprinting to the Holt end, and there was quite an emotional moment. If you don't know the story, Wolves' keeper, Carl Hakimi, was diagnosed with leukemia over the summer. So obviously he's out for the foreseeable future while he hopefully recovers from that. Gabby went over and grabbed a shirt with his name on it.
No, I think it was a really classy celebration, and it was smart by Gabby to grab a shirt and not take off his top and get a yellow, you know. I hate that it would come to that, to say support someone with leukemia. You can't take your own shirt off, but that was a classy way to do that, so all plaudits to Gabby.
Yeah, so is he back on form, you reckon, Jack? I mean, it's early days yet, but he looked pretty much on fire for those first few minutes anyway.
Yeah. With Gabby, I think that's what we want to see, is a strong either start to the game, come off flying, take everyone by surprise, or someone that you can use as an impact sub, because clearly he still has the pace, and at least for this league.
Yeah, the big question about Villa's attacking is Scott Hogan. He should have scored directly after that goal. He absolutely done the whole defence. He put it through someone's legs, carried on, held off a challenge and just ran into the keeper, unfortunately. And the chance he had after was probably almost, you know, no, everyone's overlooking this, but Al Mohammadi, he crossed it in and it was deflected right. You know, it couldn't have been more clearly onto the path of Hogan. And at that point, I reckon Villa should have been 2 or 3 up. And it says it all in the XG, really. We should have been that. We needed 2 goals out of that, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, it should have been out of sight after the end of the first half. But, oh, and sorry, to get back to your point of seeing John Terry earlier, I thought yesterday him organizing the defense on corner kicks was great.
He was yelling
at everyone and telling everyone what to do, clearing the ball. He made a mistake early, but overall it was a great match from his perspective.
Yeah, John Terry was pretty much stellar for that entire match. There's a moment of madness we'll come on to later when Hull scored, but John Terry for the most part seemed extremely intelligent, making up for, you know, a lack of pace. I mean, he's still strong, he's still smart, and you know, he's probably the smartest centre back I've seen at Villa in years. And he makes up.
Yeah, exactly. He just has so much experience. He's seen every situation and knows. That's part of the intelligence and reading the game, is if you've seen it before, you probably know what's going to happen.
Yeah, he's got great trust in Sam Johnson as well, which is good to see. One of the big problems we had this time last year was Elphick and Gallini, when Elphick wouldn't trust Gallini with anything and he would, you know, tell Gallini to do things that would result in disaster for the poor Italian, who would run out to take a cross that Elphick had told him to come out and get and, you know, deflect it into the net. So it's good to replace that with, you know, some real defending, some guy who's taking responsibility for everything.
Yeah, and certainly there's no language barrier there, which I think might have been an issue.
Exactly. And John Terry, no, it's great to see. It is great to see. The rest of the game, Villa, you know, the worst part of the pitch was midfield. It's the same. Did you see that, Jack? Did you sense that?
Yeah, I think we just needed to pack the midfield with more people. We have really quality midfielders, Lansbury, Hourihain, now Anoma even, and Glenn Whelan, he knows his way around England. So exactly. I think if you have more technically skilled players, you pack the pitch, the middle of the park, you should come out victorious, you know. You'll have more of the ball and hopefully more chances. But Bakuna is not a center mid that really is going to keep the ball and keep possession. He wants to move forward, credit to him, but he needs to be on the wing.
Yeah, midfield, Lansbury did impress early on. I have to say, he fell off later. That's a different story, though. But Leandro Bakuna was booed off the pitch, and Glenn Whelan looked a bit off the pace. But Jack, the big question is, the one I want to direct to you is, why is Cara Hourihain not starting for Villa when Bakuna has played two tournaments in the summer? And he looks off the... He doesn't look like he's had a rest.
No, it's confusing. I don't know. He must be blackmailing Steve Bruce or something. It's the obvious explanation.
Yeah, Hourihain didn't even get brought on, which is strange.
No, and while I was happy to see Anoma come on, it's strange to see him come on without having trained with the squad, really, you know?
Yeah, and Hourihain's there. He's
been there since January.
The definition of a proven championship talent, and he doesn't come on. I wouldn't want to think that
he's a proven championship match winner, I'm sorry. Not just a talent, you know?
Yeah, he's a proven best player in the championship, you know? Bar none. You know, you might have Chris Wood or a Samba Longa, you know, those championship talents down here, those real match winners, but there's no one better for me than Hourihain, who bossed it for Barnsley. But there's another thing. You've spoken a lot about head injuries, haven't you, Jack? Over your course in Twitter, over your course with time you've 7,500 to hold, a head injury or a concussion, as always, for some reason, I feel stuck out to you. Henry Lansbury took quite the elbow to the headlight on. And Ellis Sanford on the blog picked something up. He said, and he noted that in the stats, Lansbury completely drops off after he took this elbow to the head. And he was down on the pitch for quite some time. Why wasn't he taken off?
Yeah, that's one of the least shocking things ever, is that his performance dropped after he got smashed in the head by an elbow. Because, I don't know, you never want to speculate and say that he got a concussion, but in order to never speculate, you have to remove him from the pitch in case that he did suffer a concussion or a head injury. And like you said, I always go on about that. Well, in my history, I've had, I don't know, 6 or 7 concussions. So it's something that I've dealt with on a personal level, and seeing the effects of it and that people don't take them seriously is really a scary thing. So,
well, especially with so much strength on the bench as well, Jack. You know, Hourihain, we just said Hourihain could have come on. Anoma could have come on four.
Even Bjarnason, people were suggesting, could have came
Bjarnason.
On.
We had a lot of time.
Put on Bree, you push Bakuna wherever.
Exactly. It's a bit strange. I think, I don't want to say that they've, you know, known he had a concussion and kept him on, or if he had a concussion at all. But Ellis,
no, but just the lack of awareness off by Bruce to not even think that that was an option and that maybe you need to bring him off.
Yeah, I mean, you can see Villa's highlight package, and it's quite extensive. There's a 10-minute, you know, 60 frames per second, 1080p highlight package of the whole match. And you can see in slow motion, Lansbury take quite the elbow to the head. And even in the, you know, the benefit of slow motion, when things usually look a bit, you know, not as bad as they seem in full speed, that still looks quite the elbow to the head. And, you know, his production dropped off completely after that. Whether he was tired or whether it was the result of the elbow to the head, we won't know. But it didn't seem like much action was taken, so it doesn't seem like we're taking, or anyone at all is taking, head injuries in football or soccer seriously enough.
No, in almost any sport. Obviously, you know, with the NFL, and there were studies that came out that showed, 99% of players showed CTE damage from playing American football. An undeniably obvious link. And with soccer, with heading the ball, you're going to see similar effects. Obviously, no one's trying to use their head within a helmet to crash into your head, but you get those head-to-head contacts still.
Exactly. But the big moment of madness for Villa was when Hull scored the goal. So Hull surged on a counter, as you know, it's football, it bounces back and forth, but Villa tried to really restrict Hull and strangle them. Seven players pressed the ball. Seven different players across the Villa team pressed the ball. Hull simply passed wide, passed it back out to the other side of the pitch, where Villa were caught out. And because of that press, Jarrod Bowen found it all too easy to blast it past Sam Johnston at the Villa keeper's near post. Yeah. There's a lot that went wrong here.
Three right backs on the pitch for Villa, and no one could mark the furthest man on Hull's left flank or Villa's right flank, you know.
A lot of the post-match blame went on Bakuna, Jack. Why is that?
Because he's the easiest person to blame.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm looking at the heat maps right now on Opta, and Bakuna was our furthest forward on the left. He was playing, it was like we kind of played a 4-3-2-1 almost, and he was that left attacking mid left winger. If Lansbury and Whelan right in the middle of the pitch, and then Elmo was outright, Gabby, Neil Taylor, and Bakuna's almost all had the same average position. It's weird.
Exactly. One thing that's really sticks out to me is there's a clip going around on YouTube at the moment. It's about Bakuna in the quote-unquote build-up to Hull's goal, where he's walking around. Obviously, there's a lot to be said for work rate and covering your teammates, but if you're expecting a right midfielder to be covering the right, why would you, as a left-sided centre midfielder, be responsible for, you know, Alan Hutton's work or Al Mohammadi's work or even Hogan's work? Gabby's made the effort to track back, and you can see that in this same vertical slice, you know, 4 seconds of footage, that Gabby's tracked that back on the left, so why is no one on the right? It's a bit strange. But even then, Sam Johnston, keeper doesn't want to get beat on the near post. Alan Hutton dragged across everywhere because no one's helping him out. Whelan is the right-sided central midfielder, and he's not helping out on the right. Everything that could have went wrong for Villa did go wrong for Villa, and it led to him walking out of Villa Park with a point instead of three.
Yeah, sadly, it's classic Villa.
Classic Villa, like, indeed.
I retweeted my tweet from last year of New Year, same Villa, because that's what it felt like.
Exactly. They played great the whole game. I'd honestly say that. I said to you, I was really angry at the time. I left the Villa Park quite upset and be like, what have I just seen? But the simple answer is, in that 4 seconds of play, everything that could have went wrong went wrong. Villa, they stacked the middle and got split open by wide play, which is just simple. You know, you play wide formations to drag teams out, and all Hull needed to do was pass it out wide, cross it over, and you've just bamboozled the Villa defence in the midfield. There was no right defence on offer at all. Hutton was dragged over the pitch. Bakula and Whelan were just unsure what to do, and that's clear. And Sam Johnston was beat at his near post, and it's a mess. And that's a real shame, because Villa should have won that 7 times out of 10. As we said, they win that game. And because of what happened, that's the reason that it was one of those 3 out of 10 times where you don't win that game.
No, it's inexcusable. It's what Villa have been doing for years, is not capitalizing and, you know, like we said, scoring three.
Andre Green. So if you think the drama ended there, Jack, obviously you'd be wrong, wouldn't you? Andre Green ends up enjoyed something that's going to stick with him for a while. So I'll set the scene for you, mate. Al Mohammadi pings in a ball that Hull's keeper flaps in. Andre Green has made an incredibly smart run across the box. He's in the goal and he goes for the header, but he goes for the header far too early. What the ball does, it smacks him in the face, mate. And it bounces wide. He's in, you know, you've seen it. How many times have you reckon you've seen it?
Oh my gosh, it's...
And every time it should go in. You want it to go in.
He was there too quickly or something, I don't know.
From what I've seen, he just goes for the header about 2 seconds before the ball arrives, and his face is just down. You know, he's not aiming the ball into the net. It's just the ball just hits him. No word of a lie, centimetres from the goal as well. You know, he's past everyone.
Yeah, it was so unlucky that did not go in.
So that's just set piece confusion or being too eager?
Yeah, that's what I think. I think he was too eager. He was in such a good position getting there, and then just, I don't know, made a human mistake, you know, that happens.
Yeah, it happens, and it happens to Green a lot, and I think it's because, you know, it has happened a lot, so he wants to be eager to score and, you know, banish these demons. Because every time he's on the end of a cross and he goes for one of the matches sticks out last year, I think, when he's beat so many players on the wing, he's cut inside and he's hit like the perfect finesse shot on FIFA from the edge of the box. And it bangs off the crossbar, and then moments later, he's on the edge of a diving header and just trickles wide. But soon
he's gonna get it. You got to think either he's gonna figure out he's never gonna be a goal scorer, or he's gonna just really start nailing everyone.
Exactly. It's not a criticism of him. I think he's brilliant. And the fact he's making these chances when no one else is, you know, is a testament to him. One of Villa's brightest youth talents, and he's made that left wing position his own. And hopefully Steve Bruce puts him there.
I just kind of wish we were lining up a team with him, Rushen Hepburn-Murphy, with Daniel Johnson, with Callum Robinson, you know, all the, and Grealish. Obviously, it's sad that he's in the hospital now. He was watching the game from the hospital yesterday because of his kidney problem.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you drop Lansbury in for Bakuna or Whelan and you start jacking that 10 roll. You have Green out on the left and Villa, they win games. And if Andre Green puts that in, we're not having this conversation, are we? Villa win 2-1. That's it. Game's done.
Yeah, exactly. Because you trust, it's obviously Villa defense, you know they're going to leak at some point, but you trust John Terry and James Chester and Chris Samba when he's playing as a defender at the end of the game to be able to see it out if it's 2-1. I think Bruce is warming him up, told Samba to warm up because he expected Villa to take the lead.
Josh Onuma comes on after that, and he should have scored as well, but he was offside. If he measures his run a bit from that Terry flick on, that's a goal as well. He's right, he should be bang on target. But the biggest talking point of the match isn't to do with goals at all. It's Chris Samba, Jack. He's not played striker for 20 years, but he comes on for Villa in the 90th minute to play striker. What do you think of that?
I think if it works, Steve Bruce is a genius. If it fails, then everyone's lampooning him like they are now. But
it didn't really fail, though, did it? It's just too late. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Just that move, try it in the 85th.
When Anima's on the ball, you know, when he's offside, he's nearly scored. When Andre Green has nearly scored, that should be where Samba would have scored. If you do that move, you can't do it at 90 minutes. That's an 85, you know, 80th minute sub, and he's not as stupid as everyone makes out for make. You know,
I don't think it is at all. If you look at
Samba has played striker. He's played on the wing. Genuinely, this is not made up. He was moved to a defender quite late in his development just because of his size. And you know, we saw in preseason that he has got ball skills and he does go on runs. And even when he was in Russia for Ansi, he did play as a left back, a left wing back, and a winger. This isn't new for him.
No, it's new in England. It's a strategy that's commonly used anyway, because he's 35 career goals. But I think if you need a goal, you have a big lad you can throw on up there. He doesn't even have to be the furthest forward. He can just win those flick ons to try to get it to. Two-year-old Bonlahores, who somehow played 90 minutes, or two Hogan, who's up there, or two Andre Green.
Well, at 7,500, we had some player ratings by Sean Evans, one of our new writers, and he put down Gabby as the man of the match. Is that something you would agree with, Jack?
Yeah, just because he scored the goal.
The stats say he didn't have any touches, but I think his off-the-ball work is to be commended here. He was constantly pressing. You know, he never stopped pressing, and you know he was filling in at left back for Taylor on the overlap.
Yeah, you don't get credit for touches, or you don't get credit for anything when you run at players, you press the ball, and you make them pass it out of bounds. You don't get any stats for that, you know.
Yeah, you can't get expected presses just yet, but we'll bring them to you.
I mean, if you look at heat map, obviously it won't be the touch map, but you can see how much
where he is. Yeah,
technically someone covers so.
But yeah, I have to agree. He'll get a lot of slack for not having the ball, especially it goes back to like Tottenham game when he had 8 touches and stuff like that. He's got a reputation for never touching the ball, but he's off the ball.
It goes back to Gardner when there was the Opta fail and he had not very many touches. You know, the data were wrong. And even though it eventually got corrected, you know, people see one thing and
that's it. It's done, isn't it?
You get an idea in your head.
It's like Samba, like, you can sit back seriously after the match and go, Chris Samba has played striker. That's his role he grew up playing. You know, he was changed to a defender at age 18. You know, imagine Andre Green getting changed to defender right now. Obviously, it wouldn't happen.
Well, you look at people, what people want Jordan Amavi to get changed to a defender to be like, or changed to an attacker to be like Gareth Bale. But
exactly. It doesn't often happen, and it happened to Samba, who has excelled, you know, in that Blackburn team. He was excelling in that Blackburn team, and he's a great defender. I'm not sure why he had to beg Villa for trials and stuff. But, yeah, he got played up front, and if it worked, he's a genius. He should have come on earlier, unfortunately, when we were pinging balls into the box. But, yeah, it was far too little, far too late. But I think that's it for Hull, Jack. Have you got any closing thoughts on that whole game?
At least we didn't lose.
Exactly, yeah. Last season, I think we started off with a loss to Wednesday, and we were more optimistic after that loss to Wednesday than we were for a draw against Hull when we should have won.
Exactly, but the only thing that's important is get through the first 11 games without having 7 draws and 3 losses.
Yeah, exactly.
Please don't do that again, otherwise we'll have to pack it in for the season.
We've got a few games coming up to preview this week. We've got Colchester in the Carabao Cup, which is the League Cup named after the energy drink that seems to sponsor most teams. Chelsea, Reading, they're all over everything. But on Wednesday night, we head to Colchester, Essex to play out the first round of the Carabao Cup. Last year, this tie was horrible. It was against Luton. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, I guess I was even thinking of Notts County. That was the what? That was the next one.
That was 2 years.
Or 2 years
that
ago.
That was 2 years ago.
Christ.
Yeah, that Notts County one was. I liked that.
It was the sign of things to come. We were going to score goals, but we were going to concede a lot of goals. And then
Luton was the 3-1. 3-1 last year. I think it was AU that grabbed the goal. Akore passed the ball into the net.
Oh yeah, and clinical on goal.
Yeah. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Ideally, if we don't go down 3-1 to Colchester, I think it's a success. Do you expect us to lose?
No, I expect Villa to win. Maybe probably 3-1 or 2-0. You know, I think I expect them to come back after that game and say we made a lot of mistakes, but we are a good team. We should be the class of the championship. That's what Villa should be. You know.
Yeah, exactly. The last time we met Colchester, it was in the League Cup, the same competition we're playing on Wednesday. But it was in 1979. We played out a 2-2 draw with Colchester, and we won for a penalty shootout and 9-8. That was dug up by @NewYorkVillains on Twitter. I've just saw that before we went into recording. But would a repeat of this be good enough for you?
9-8 on penalties? That's fantastic entertainment.
Would it be on ABBA? Yeah, I think it would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, EFL said in any English Football League competition, that's the EFL Cup, which this is, or the EFL Trophy, which is where the reserve teams play, teams League One and under, and they're the ABBA or ABBA shootout. Do you have any thoughts on that, actually? Because we've just seen that, haven't we?
Yeah, it's funny. No, I just tweeted it, and it's the ABBA. It's like the snake draft, you know, and if you do fantasy Premier League, I think a lot of people are learning that, but it was more common in American fantasy sports. But so it'd be, I get the first, you get 2 and 3, I get 4 or 5, and you'd have 6. It's weird with only 2 people, you know, it's not really like the snake draft. But
I like it.
I really do like it. Yeah. I just tweeted, though, that I think that they should use both formats, and it should be random. So you can't train to do one of them or something, you know? Because if you do 2 penalties in a row, maybe you tell your guys both shoot to the right because the keeper, I don't know. It's when you get in the shootouts, it's always reverse psychology. You shoot right 2 times in a row, it's unlikely that he thinks you're going to shoot that. It's all game theory.
It's not the most pressing change that needed to be made to the game. There are a lot of things.
They're never going to change things that actually matter. It's just a little tweak here.
We saw it in the Community Shield clash where Arsenal battered Chelsea 4-1 on penalties, with Thibaut Courtois blazing one into the stands of Wembley. But yeah, ideally that won't happen if Colchester take us to penalties. We won't have Sam Johnston take one. But yeah, after that League Cup.
If it goes 9-8, we probably will get to Johnston.
by default.
Yeah, but yesterday was the German Super Cup, and that was not the ABBA format, and it was good drama. It ended, the game ended in normal time 2-2, so after the shootout, Bayern had won 7-6, so 5-4 in the shootout.
You know, this brings me to those old MLS-style like MLS mid-90s shootouts where you had the ball from the halfway line.
Oh man, that's class that you mentioned that, because my friend was here yesterday, and after the Super Cup, the German Super Cup, I was showing him old MLS shootouts because he hadn't seen it. So I was like, "Do you know what this is?" And he had no idea. So he was loving that. He says, "Why don't they do this now?"
for the people who aren't listening, basically, well, you haven't heard of the MLS style shootouts. Basically, you get the ball at the halfway line.
Oh, it's like, I think it's like the 30-35 yard line, I guess, because they were all in old NFL stadiums, you know, so they all had the yard lines.
Oh yeah, exactly.
So it's like twice as far out from the box, basically, the edge of the box.
You get the ball and you sprint, and the keeper sprints out to you.
You have a timer, so you have to shoot before, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 seconds.
Yes, so you've got the ball, and the keeper usually doesn't stay put. They sprint out. They often sprint out to you, don't they?
Yeah.
And it's just you. I like that. I think that's a brilliant. No, I genuinely think, because a lot of people dismiss it as American theatrics. You know, you have that 1994 World Cup kind of denim kit kind of thing going on with those kind of shootouts. But I'm a real big fan of them. I think
I think they're great.
Yeah, it's a really good way to, you know. It's stupid. The penalty shootouts are stupid as well.
It's not MLS. Let me start that over. Shootouts in general are not football. So why do you think that football, you know, should be the prevailing force when determining logic with regards to shootouts? Because they're, you know,
they're exactly.
It's not how you play football.
And I mean, like, the history of penalty shootouts is just weird because, you know, you have a team that's not performed for the whole game, drag it out to a penalty shootout to win on the penalty shootout. And it doesn't seem like the fairest, almost entertaining way to send a team through. And I mean, you could say you could draw lots or something, which happened a few years ago, I think, in the World Cup, to send a team out.
It's much worse to do that, pick the names out of
exactly.
a hat. Are you serious?
So we have loads of ways in which to, you know, separate drawing or tying teams, and we still come to drawing lots and penalty shootouts, which is quite strange.
Yeah, so I've just gone and tweeted a link to a YouTube video of old MLS shootouts, and one of them, the keeper fouls the taker, so it goes to an actual spot kick in that.
That's quite great.
You gotta watch this good video. I'm going to start doing this now, I guess, when I'm on the whole cast. If we talk about external things, I tweeted a couple screenshots of heat maps. So maybe you guys saw them on Twitter before hearing this, but that's what
he does. It's a maverick. Where can we find you, Jack, just for interest on Twitter?
Yeah, just at Jack Gribbsy on Twitter. Or if you want to actually see not my stupid tweets, but things I do, it's facebook.com/Jack Gribbsy. I mostly just post actual work there.
Actual work.
You know, I mean, I post all my work on Twitter, but it gets washed away by things like old MLS shootout videos because they're funny.
That's a great link, actually. We're off on the road again to Cardiff next weekend, and hopefully we won't get washed away in the Bay of Wales. But yeah, I was going to go to this away game, but I'm saving up, and any excuse not to see Neil Warnock in person does me a world of good, I feel, because it does make me angry. I don't know. It was his 50th year in football.
Yeah, congrats to him. That's class.
Yeah, that's amazing. But God, he does bitch so much about things just beyond his control or beyond.
I think that's just one of those rights you earn when you get that old. You know, you've seen everything, so you get to say, "Oh, it should be this way."
I mean, saying you want to shoot a referee dead with a double-barreled shotgun.
All right, I didn't hear that. I take it. You can't do that, even if you vote for whoever you want to vote for.
Didn't he call Jack? I think he called Jack Grealish a tosser as well.
Yeah. I don't think he's the only person to have done that.
Yeah, because he started apparently Grealish was apparently diving in that game despite being kicked to shreds.
Yeah. He's always crushed and the referee never gives him any help. But
do you know much about Cardiff this year? Have you followed them at all?
No, not really.
Me either.
For me, the championship, every game you're not playing at home is one of those games that you maybe are not going to win.
Well, they started off their season yesterday with a win away to Burton at the Pirelli in Burton. So that's 1-0. That sends them to the top of the championship table. And Burton down to the bowels of the championship table. We expect Burton to get relegated this season. But a lot of people are tipping Cardiff to be a threat. And
they kind of had a couple years, you know, laying low. They spent too much money in the Premier League. They went down, and you have to kind of consolidate, I think, and then try to make a run at it again.
Yeah. So I'm not too optimistic about heading to Cardiff and getting 3 points, Jack, to be completely honest.
No, I think 1 point, you know, it's still early, and we're always complaining about draws already, but a draw there is a fine result. You just have to win the home games. That's why we're annoyed.
Yeah, the problem is then you have Villa want to average 2 points or around 1.6 or 1.8 to have standard chance of promotion or playoffs this season. And, you know, you head to Cardiff for a draw. And then you've got Norwich after, which is going to be obviously a tricky tie at home. And you stand a chance of your first three games being three draws. You know, that's not 6 points.
No.
Or 9 points, is it?
That's why you say, whatever, you better lose one of those two and win the other one. I don't care about it. Stop getting draws. Throw everything for the points. You know?
Cardiff all move out. Yeah.
I guess that's my final thought on Hull is that I would have rather lost it and put on three strikers going for the win than taking a draw.
I think that's what Stevie's tried to do with Samba.
Yeah, I guess so, but...
Cardiff are without former Villa man Peter Whittingham, who became a legend at Cardiff after he left Villa, making almost 500 appearances and scoring almost 100 goals. He's at Blackburn now, so...
And they went down. Cardiff,
yeah, they went down into League One, and I don't think they started off their season that well. Let me have a look, because that will...
But yeah, even going back to that point about chucking strikers on, Steve Bruce was limited because Adoma and Kojar are out, and then I don't even know what's happening with McCormick.
Yeah, for reference, Blackburn were beaten by Southend, so Whittingham didn't have the best start. But Cardiff did have that good start, as we said. They beat Burton 1-0. I expect them to be one of those teams that are stealing 1-0 games across the season, and they'll be in with a shout at the playoffs. I think Neil Warnock is a wily old championship manager, as the stereotype goes, with Steve Bruce being his slightly younger counterpart. Neil Warnock's been doing this for years. Crystal Palace, Sheffield United, he's got teams up. Crystal Palace as well. He's got a championship pedigree. He knows how to get teams up. It's just a shame he never gets an actual job when he gets to the Premier League.
Yeah.
Any predictions for the Cardiff game, Jack?
I'm going to say Villa 2-1. We're going to...
What you want to see from the actual game as well?
Yeah, I just want to see some strikers looking more clinical. Because we're actually creating chances. Last year was a big problem with that, but
personally, I want to see us defy XG. I want to see us, if we predicted one goal, I want to see us get us two.
Oh, you want to nick a result?
Yeah, I think if we can show the boss, be the boss of the numbers, then it'll prove good. As long as it's not.
That's what Forrest did that to Millwall. Millwall, it was another against their run of play. They won 1-0 though, instead of drawing like us.
Yeah, obviously we don't want to make a tradition or something regular of defying expectations when it comes to expected goals and all that. Because that's Reading's problem as well.
Stam is a quality coach in my opinion. But exactly. I don't know, if you defy expectations all season, maybe you end up like Leicester.
Exactly. You know, defying expectations wins you the big games and it sets your team up for life, like it did for Leicester. But if Reading go down, as many people are actually predicting them to go down statistically.
No way.
I don't see it happening as well, but the nerds do, and they're smarter than, I think, us, Jack. But,
they are.
Well, they have to get out of the headlock first, innit? So,
yeah.
I think that's it from us, Jack. We've had a meaty Holtcast today. There's been a lot to preview, a lot to talk about. You can find us at 7500 to Holt on Twitter. I'm Jamo Rushton. That's J-A-M-O Rushton with a T-O-N at the end. We can catch Jack Grimsey at Jack Grimsey. Where are you working now, Jack?
I'm working at Be In Sports USA. So obviously we've been getting a lot of flack for losing the championship rights by everyone to ESPN, I guess. But yeah, it's
happens, doesn't it?
In the US, so
Oh, you've got real football at least, haven't you? Really nice. Have you got Serie A still?
Yeah, we've got Serie A. We've got Neymar now, even with Liga and obviously La Liga.
Perfect.
And we got the Turkish league this year. So what, Ali Sissoko?
I think it's Antalyaspor or something.
Oh, Antalyaspor. And Trabzonspor has Villa's colors. We're all trying to pick Turkish teams because it's funny. But
what about come to Beşiktaş?
Yeah, Negredo just went there, and those ads are great.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, Villa maybe needs something. We had the show I work on, it's called The Extra, and we had when John Terry joined the WhatsApp group, we had that on our show, because that was funny.
Villa's yeah, exactly, best, but I think come to Beşiktaş is the one. Hashtag come to Beşiktaş.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best better announcement videos you see. And Ash Roma are AS Roma. AS Roma are one of a good one. They just copy everyone there.
They're hilarious. Their tweets that are like those YouTube videos for like all the skills and tricks and with all the emojis, and it's just terrible music that always goes with the goals. I don't know why people make goal highlight videos with the worst music.
But yeah, I think that's it from us today. Obviously, you can catch Jack on Twitter at Jack Grimsey, and he'll be back to join us soon. But we'll catch you at the same time next Sunday. Hopefully, Villa will be on 4 points and in the next round of the Cup. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, any other app, and 7500toholt.com. I've been James Richardson, and as for Jack Grimsey, that's it for today. See ya.
Thanks. Have a good one.